GameZillaMedia.com.
It's time for the Last Action Podcast!
Pop quiz, hotshot!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
I feel the need for speed!
If speeds, we can kill it.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Come with me if you want to live.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Last Action Podcast. I am LPJ, and I'm joined by a man who once tried to pay me $10,000 to jump out of a cake for his birthday for him. Hovercraft Joe.
I only offered you $10,000, not $10 million?
No, just $10,000. We wanted to put things
in perspective. You don't have $10 million. Well, you don't have $10,000.
I was going to say,
I wanted to keep this realistic. No. I want people to sort of buy the lie a little
bit. Just to clarify, yeah. I do have $10,000. So
yeah, but not enough to pay LPJ to jump out of a cake with his dong hanging out. I added that last part.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Oh well, if you can't tell the
well, that gets its own cake. I don't know if you know that or not. It's like an extension to the cake. So the cake is like normal cake shape, and then it's got this oblong cake that attaches to it out the front.
And okay. The weird thing is, it curves up.
It's Wait, very what? Strange. It's weird. It's kind of weird how that happens, though.
Yeah.
Look, sometimes you just can't help it. You're born the way you're born.
Hovercraft Joe wants to move on so badly.
Okay, so we are talking this
episode.
Okay,
so this cake, right? It's got...
Oh my gosh. This is like such a prank right now. I'm not convinced that you actually started recording the episode.
Oh no, we're recording. You're talking about my dong and a cake. What kind of cake would it be?
Well, I mean, I would say lemon cake, but I don't know.
Or like a Boston cream, maybe?
Ooh, yeah. Boston cream.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think so. But with sprinkles, because, you know.
Yeah. It certainly can't be cheesecake. That's too dense for you to be inside there.
Too dense. You'd way suffocate. Too dense. Yeah, you're right. Not enough air. It's got to breathe. It's got to breathe. That's why I wear boxers.
It's true.
So for the audience,
so big
I'd like
round you... cakes underneath, right? Represent. I'm sorry. Keep going.
For the audience, I'd like you to know that LPJ was being a real bitch when we hopped on this call because I was trying to send a text before we started recording, and he's like, "We're waiting for you. Just waiting for you to start." And now we've started, and him and Dave have talked about his dick and a cake for 5 minutes.
Well worth it. Well worth it.
Anyways. We're talking this episode about Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre. Is that how you'd say it, Dave?
That's how I would say it.
Is Mrs. Holtz here?
Ruse de Guerre. That was a deep cut. That was our French teacher in high school. So this movie came out just last year in 2023. It's released over internationally in January 4th of 2023 and released here in the States on March 3rd of 2023. And this is kind of a movie that maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with at all. In as much as I don't think you, LPJ, had ever heard of it when I mentioned it to you.
No, I had never heard of it, which is, I not that I follow Guy Ritchie movies specifically, but generally when there's a Guy Ritchie movie out, I know that it's out. This one, I had no idea that it even existed.
It got kind of screwed on multiple levels. It was delayed because of COVID. It got the super short theatrical window. It was really, 2 weeks, and then it was already available on demand. It definitely was delayed because of COVID. There's some, January release, and then also some people say that because some of the minor villains are Ukrainian, that they didn't want to have Ukraine. I think that's kind of a conspiracy theory. I don't know if there's any real truth to that, but because the war with Ukraine had just started, had just started, they didn't really want to portray Ukrainian villains, but I don't know how much truth there is to that. So it basically kind of got buried a little bit.
So. Yeah. And because this is one, I remember, when the trailer for it came out, and I remember watching the trailer and, being like, oh, that looks cool. But like you said, it got so lost in the shuffle that, I didn't see it in theaters because it wasn't out for very long. And I think I kind of finally, I think I forgot about it for a while. And then eventually I ended up renting it and watching it, you know, like a while ago now. But when we were trying to figure out a Guy Ritchie movie to do, you know, we were kind of going back and forth, and some of the issues were availability to watch. But then Tush brought up this one, and that's when I mentioned it to LBJ, and he was like, huh?
Like, what is that?
He thought you were pulling a Ruse de Guerre.
He did. But I was like, it's on Stars. It's fine. But what about you, Tush? Anything else to add as far as, like, anything?
No, I mean, I guess we're kind of really covering our experience with this movie.
Yeah, so, that's what I mean. Yeah.
It was. I saw it in the theaters because I see every Jason Statham movie in the theaters, and I like Guy Ritchie as long as he's not making like a Disney movie or a King Arthur movie. So, and his next movie looks sweet.
Yes. Have you watched this movie? You saw it in the theaters, and this is your first time rewatching it.
I rewatched it on Stars once. So
okay.
And including this. So yes, yeah, so I enjoy it, but we'll get to that later, though.
Yeah. Now, what about you, LPJ?
Seeing this movie?
Yeah, what's your experience?
Oh, I thought we were talking about that. Yeah, this is the first time I'd ever seen it. I mean, like, it's a short answer, guys. This is my first time. Up until 2 weeks ago, I didn't know this existed.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? You're a busy man building dick cakes, so.
No. I design them. Other people build them for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can't reach.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie has a budget of $50 million.
I can usually handle the sprinkle part, though. I can put the sprinkles on just fine.
A domestic gross of $6 million, and then a worldwide gross of $48 million. So it is effectively a big bomb.
Yeah. I have to say, they didn't spend very much on marketing. So I would imagine that it's probably with, you know, streaming and other stuff, it probably ended up breaking even, you know.
After I read about this, because it was filmed in 2021, my guess is this was probably one of those movies that they had considered just taking the tax break on, you know, and just not even releasing it. That would be my guess for the way they handled it. So they probably didn't put a lot toward marketing, didn't put a lot toward anything, and just said, all right, well, let's just throw it out and see what happens. And we'll go from there.
Well, I know there was talk for a while that people were saying that it was going to, like, they were just going to sell it to, like, a streamer, and it was going to come out, like, direct to, like, a streaming service. But obviously, that's not how they went with it. But, okay, so it has a 51% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is clearly higher than the 9% that Beverly Hills Cop 3 got, and a lot higher than the 0% that Death Warrant got. And it has an audience score of 82. It has an audience score of 82%. So, I mean, that's pretty solid, pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that revolves around the fact that there's a lot of, like, hardcore Guy Ritchie fans. Like, there's people that just eat up everything Guy Ritchie does.
That's fair. Okay. Top grossing movies of 2023. Number one is Barbie. Number two is the Super Mario Brothers movie. And number three is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And again, domestic box office. So worldwide, I know. All my Oppenheimer peeps are like, where's Oppenheimer? Domestic. It was like fifth in the domestic.
Yeah, it blew up overseas. That joke was so good on a lot of levels, guys.
No, obviously, so weirdly, not that much in Japan, though.
That was probably one of your best jokes you've ever made on this entire podcast. 269 episodes in, and you got your best joke.
That's all I need. You know what? We're done. We can stop here, guys. We don't need to get to 270. We're just gonna stop.
I mean, I obviously approve of stopping on this 69. So.
We have not covered any other movies from 2023, or we might have, but maybe they were. I feel like maybe we covered one that wasn't released in theaters, but
did we?
Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't think we
Extraction 2, was that this year? Was that 2024?
Oh, no, that was.
It might have been 2023.
That was 2023. Yeah, you're right. Extraction 2.
Yeah.
Okay. But obviously, it wasn't released in theaters, so I don't have any numbers for it. Okay. So the cast of this movie. Tush already mentioned Jason Statham. It also has another one of Tush's boys, Cary Elwes, in it.
Awesome.
Hugh Grant, Aubrey Plaza, Josh Hartnett, Eddie Marsan, who's like someone I feel like I kind of know, but I don't know who he plays in this movie.
he's the guy in the
like the interior minister.
He's like the interior minister.
Oh, okay. And then Bugsy Malone. I don't know who Bugsy Malone is.
Well, apparently you guys have UK listeners, so they will be excited about that. there's like a type of like kind of like so. Okay, I watched Noel Gallagher talk about this. I guess it's called like grit or something. Like a type of like UK rapping that's like so for the longest time, like UK rapping was just bad knockoff of American grime. That's it, grime. And except now they kind of developed their own kind of style of rap, and I guess this guy's big in that. So
well, here's the thing. I love Bugsy Malone in this movie. I think he's great.
Yeah, he's really good.
I think he's great. Best,
I think he's fine, but I think he's so underused. Like, they just kind of shove him off to the side.
Well, yeah, I would say he's probably the best rapper slash actor who's taken his name from a Scott Baio, Jodie Foster movie.
Wow, that is... Okay. You know
what? Thank you.
Anyone else that you guys want to highlight or bring up as far as the cast?
No.
No.
No, really. Really, I don't.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. All right. Let's do some net worths. And let's start with the aforementioned Bugsy Malone. He's got that sweet, sweet grime rapping money, LBJ. What do you think for Bugsy Malone?
He's got that sweet, sweet grime rapping money, guys. I don't know how much grime rappers make. I would imagine a fair amount. They're rappers. Most musicians that have any kind of name value to them typically make a fair amount of money from what we can see on, you know, past instances. I'm going to go $100 million. Just taking a stab.
Okay. What do you think, Tush?
I mean, he's got that sweet, sweet grime rapping money. they really bend you over on taxes in the UK. So I'm going to say he's worth $10 million. U.S. dollars, that's like, you know, a little less than pounds.
$4 million. $4 million. You overshot it. Yeah.
Oh, he is getting screwed then as a...
Yeah. Gotta be a tax exile like the Rolling Stones.
Next up, Josh Hartnett. He's got that sweet, sweet, the faculty money. Tush, what do you think for Josh Hartnett?
He's got that sweet, sweet 40 days and 40 nights money. I think he's probably worth $10 million.
What do you think, LPJ?
He's got that sweet, sweet... Did you already say the faculty?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got that sweet, sweet... What was that other...
Teenage Girl Dying movie money.
Yeah, that one. No, he's got that sweet, sweet... Yeah. Pearl Harbor money?
Yeah.
Yes.
There it is, Pearl Harbor money. I'll go $15
million. What did you say again, Tush? I'm sorry, I forgot.
I said $10
million. $25 million. You guys are lowballing Josh Hartnett. Next up, Hugh Grant. He's got that sweet, sweet Love Actually money. What do you think, LPJ, for Hugh Grant?
He's got that sweet, sweet movie that my wife watches all the time, Notting Hill money. $60 million.
Okay. What do you think, Tush?
He's got that sweet, sweet About a Boy money, the movie, not the TV show. I think he's worth $100
million. $150 million for
you. Oh, you know what that is? That's that sweet, sweet Dungeons & Dragons money.
That's that sweet, sweet Paddington 2 money.
That's what it is. You're right. That's exactly what it is.
Next up, Cary Elwes. He's got that sweet, sweet Robin Hood Men in Tights money. Tush, what do you think for Cary Elwes?
He's got that sweet, sweet liar, liar money. You're afraid of the claw. I think he's also like minor royalty or something. I might be wrong on that. I can't remember, but I'd say he's worth $50
million. Okay. What do you think, LPJ?
I bet he makes a fair amount on residuals for things. Yeah. He's been in some big movies, one of which he's got sweet, sweet money for that we probably should cover on this podcast, Twister.
Oh, yeah.
To the sweet, sweet Twister money. I'm going to go $60
million. You guys, way too high for Cary Elwes. He's got $6 million.
That is a shame.
Yeah. He was on an episode of Seinfeld. He was on those great episodes of Psych. I like Cary Elwes.
Okay, two more. Aubrey Plaza. She's got that sweet, sweet Parks and Recreation money. LBJ, what do you think? for Aubrey Plaza.
Aubrey Plaza's got that sweet, sweet Scott Pilgrim Netflix cartoon money. Was it Netflix or Amazon?
It was Netflix. I think it's like, I think it was called like Scott Pilgrim Levels Up or something like I can't remember.
Whatever.
I watched it. It was good. It was
I
good.
Enjoyed it. I thought it was great. $15 million.
What do you think, Tush?
He's got that sweet, sweet bad grandpa money. or is it dirty grandpa? Bad grandpa. Okay, it's dirty. Whatever. They're one of the Robert De Niro. Dirty grandpa.
I think it's dirty grandpa.
I think it's dirty
was
grandpa.
It bad grandpa, grandpa, the one with Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah, I think she's worth $6 million.
$8 million. And as an alternate, you could have said she's got that sweet, sweet. Was it date? Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates money.
Oh yeah, it's a pretty good movie.
And then finally, our boy Jason Statham. He's got that sweet, sweet 100% future episode of this podcast, The Beekeeper money. What do you think, LBJ, for Jason Statham?
He's got that sweet, sweet one of the most underrated movies of all time money, Death Race.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm going to go $60 million because I've said it four other times.
Okay. And what do you think, Tush?
He's got that sweet, sweet Crank money because I love Crank so much. I think he's worth $200 million.
$90 million.
Yeah. You'd think we'd have it down by now because I've been on several Jason Statham episodes.
It's true, but
see, we've done this one. We did Hobbs and Shaw, The Meg,
Expendables,
Fast and Furious. We've done Expendables. We've done.
Well, he wasn't in. We haven't done one of the Fast and Furiouses that he was in.
He's in the Fast and Furious.
No, he's not.
Oh, you're right. That's right. He's not. He's in the sixth one.
I mean, we did both. We did Crank 1, Crank 2.
Death Race.
I think we did two Transporter movies.
Two Transporter movies.
We did two Expendables movies.
The Italian Job.
I'm pretty sure we did The Meg, right?
Yeah, The Meg, The Italian Job.
Yeah. Oh, Jet Li's the one.
I was gonna say one.
All right, that's enough. We had a lot.
But I would say just before we move on, whose bitch is Yulaw, Tush?
Yulaw is no one's bitch.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. LBJ, what do you got for director and writers?
I mean, it's Guy Ritchie.
Okay, but you're supposed to elaborate on it. We've done 200,000 episodes. You're supposed to elaborate.
Okay, that's fair. So initially when this film was written, it was written by, Ivan Atkinson and, Marne Davies, and written, when I say written by, as far as Guy Ritchie writing this, it's very loosely said because most of this movie was just improv. He wrote the scenes kind of on the day as they were happening and then just said, okay, everybody just riff. And then they did that. And that's essentially how the movie came together, which, you know, spoiler alert, you can kind of tell. But as far as directing goes, yeah, he also directed this film. He got his start doing Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch, and then made a billion other films. Not a billion. He made a lot of other movies that people have seen.
Like the live-action Aladdin.
Live-action Aladdin. He did the Sherlock Holmes movies, which are also pretty good. Wrath of Man, which is good, that we should cover. We have it. Yeah, and then some other terrible movies, like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and King Arthur.
I wouldn't call The Man from U.N.C.L.E. terrible. I mean, just because Armie Hammer is like wants to eat everybody. But, you know.
I mean, to be fair, also, we were going to do Wrath of Man, but then it was like the most unaccessible movie ever.
Yeah. You can't rent it. You can buy it, though, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, it like it for. I remember being on like Paramount and like Amp Prime for like ever. So anyways, okay. I could not find any taglines for this movie, but Tush, if you had to make one up, what would it be?
You're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, a new feature I just invented.
Yeah, I would say the most testicle trauma you'll ever see on the screen, aside from Casino Royale, because he grabs that guy's nuts, he tasers that guy's nuts really enthusiastically. So there's lots of testicle trauma.
That's you know what? I would say that's too wordy of a tagline, but considering some of the taglines we've heard,
What about you, OPJ?
I would shorten it. I would just say nut zapping.
Balls out.
Nut zapping.
Nut zapping action.
I would be like, his name is Orson Fortune, and he's going to hurt your nuts one way or another.
His name is Orson Fortune. Unfortunately for you, your nuts are about to get zapped. And then there's going to be a bunch of Z's at the end.
This is the greatest new feature we've invented in a while.
You know who would like this movie a lot? Passenger 57. What the fuck is that?
Wesley Snipes character from Passenger 57. Yeah, it's true. Okay. Anything else that you guys want to mention before we get started? Apparently, I'm going to mention this, that ruse de guerre is a French military idiom. Sometimes translated as ruse of war, literally means war cunning or combat trickery. So that's there for you. Sometimes I like, and we talk sometimes about how the trivia on Internet Movie Database is hilarious. And one of the facts that it lists in this one is the film that Fortune sits down to watch mid-heist is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Like, okay, yeah, no shit.
Yeah. Literally the song is playing, like, you know, that everyone recognizes from the movie. And it's like, yeah, we know.
The one thing that I read that I really enjoyed, and I guess I don't know how truth is this is. I don't know what Guy Ritchie's football affiliation is, but it says that three of the main characters' names are Trent, Alexander, and Arnold, named after Trent Alexander Arnold, the famous Liverpool football player. So there you go.
Great. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
You're the only Liverpool fan here, so.
Yeah, there's probably somebody listening that is.
So. You know what? Come on, you Spurs. That's it. That's come on, you Spurs. Try not to play like the Spurs for a change.
I believe if you're not a mank, you're a wank.
Okay, save it for our upcoming Premier League podcast. Okay.
Where we just insult each other the entire time.
But then we bring Jody out, I guess, just to make fun of Chelsea.
Yep. Chelsea. Moving on.
Okay, let's start. Let's start going through the plot.
Ooh, I just looked it up, guys. Bad news. Guy Ritchie's a Chelsea fan. Gross.
Oh man, I don't even want to do the episode anymore. Okay, so movie starts off with London. In London, my first note is, man, Cary Elwes is a loud walker. He's like walking down a hallway, and his footsteps are just loud, and he's walking a lot.
I think they added that noise in after. I don't know. He's not really a loud walker. That's a special effect. They call it Foley.
He snuck up on LPJ
right.
Real
they have these guys called Foley artists, right, that just do all the sound effects. So that's probably the person they used was probably larger than Cary Elwes. And had the
you feel like they should have put the song "Here Comes the High Stepper" right. while he was
right, because that's
walking.
What that's what the Foley artist was high stepping, and that's how they got the noise. It wasn't really him.
Yeah, it was like two coconuts getting knocked together.
It's a movie magic, Joe.
You really grinded my gears, LBJ. I don't know. You got a thing going on this episode. You're just trying to be
feel particularly assy today, my friend.
Yeah, I'm gathering that. Okay, so anyways, we see while intercut with him walking, we see something gets stolen from like some kind of like secret facility or lab, and he goes and talks to Eddie Marsan, who like works for the government. And Cary Elwes basically runs like a military contracting like company, I guess, that does missions for the government. Is that maybe the best way to describe it?
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's missions that the government doesn't want to take full ownership of, so they outsource them to essentially contracted black ops groups, and that's what these are.
And basically, they need to find out. They don't know what was stolen from the lab at this point, but they know that it's code name. It's known as The Handle, and that basically it has a $10 billion price tag. So he contracts Cary Elwes and his crew to track down, figure out what the handle is, and recover it. This is also where he talks about why he needs to hire them for the ruse de guerre, an unorthodox approach to war. He drops that little tidbit, drops the title there. We're introduced to Orson Fortune. That is Jason Statham. He's like the head, the main guy for Cariola's team. He goes to Morocco to get Jason Statham, who's supposed to be on vacation. And there's all these jokes about like Jason Statham's like medicinal requirements, but I guess it's just that he really likes expensive wine. That's what it is.
Yep.
And they have to buy him really expensive bottles of wine when they hire him to do missions.
Yes.
True. That's what I believe that you started requesting at work.
Yeah, that, I get paid in bottles of wine. So
empty bottles, and what they do is they put them. Never mind.
You're about to go off on a tangent. You're like, you know what? Not worth it.
Okay, we're 25 minutes in, and we should probably just keep rolling.
Yeah.
So he convinces Statham to do the mission, and they're putting together their team. And they find out that their comms guy, I think his name was John, maybe.
Yeah.
He left and joined Mike Hook's team. And Mike Hook is like a competitor of theirs. He's like another like military contractor.
But I guess what I can't figure out is Statham keeps referring to him as like, actually, Cary always keeps referring to him as someone who always screws things up and never gets the job done. I don't get why people would keep hiring him, why he's such a big threat.
Well,
he keeps screwing up.
I don't think it screws up. I think that it's like, I think the difference is like that their team is really stealthy and that his team is kind of just like a sledgehammer, just like shoots and blows stuff up and like maybe gets the job done, but in a messy way where his team is more over and okay. kind of like skilled in that manner. I think that's what the difference is. And I think they kind of highlight that in the way that they, you know, when they show up and they're like, you know.
I agree. Okay, that's fair.
So they get the team together. Their new comms person is Aubrey Plaza, whose name in the movie I can't remember. Sarah. So and then she's like their new comms person, and then their other person on the team is Bugsy Malone, also known as JJ Davies. They're in Spain and they're at the airport, and they got to track a bag man who's got a hard drive. And then someone starts tasing the members. There's other members of the team that we never really meet. Two ladies in the airport.
Two ladies.
And they start getting taken out by members of Mike Hook's team because he's there. And this is where Statham tases the dude in the balls. and he tases the other guy. And well, first he like karate chops him in his like windpipe in his throat. And then I think he tases him in his throat as well.
Yes, I believe so.
So the bag man is just like some professor whose wife they kidnap to like deliver this hard drive. So they're trying to take the guy. They try and grab the bag man, but like Jason Statham beats up guys and they take him. But then the bag man, the professor dude, has a heart attack. Before he dies, he's like, "Oh, you gotta deliver this hard drive to the Duchess, table 12 at 6."
Can you say that like Billy Joel would say it, please?
Heart attack.
Thank you.
That was it.
So he's like, "You gotta deliver this hard drive to the Duchess at table 12 at 6 p.m. or they're going to kill my wife." And then he dies of a heart attack. Mike takes the hard drive, but not before Aubrey Plaza is able to make a copy of it. So then Cary Elwes, he poses as a professor to meet the buyer. And the buyer is Ben Harris, who is like the lawyer for Greg Simmons. And Greg Simmons is Hugh Grant's character, who's like a really powerful, well-known like arms dealer, right? And he's brokering the deal to sell the handle, but his whole thing is like he's very elusive and people can't get close to him. So they concoct this plan where they're going to get Danny Francesco, who is played by Josh Hartnett, and he's like Hugh Grant's like favorite movie star. Like Hugh Grant's kind of like obsessed with him, and that's go ahead.
I was trying to figure out like who Danny is.
I mean, I feel like with the like doing all his own stunts and such, it could be Tom Cruise,
right?
Well, there's no weird religious angle there, so I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, he could be. I heard it's like maybe it was an interview with Josh Hartnett where he's basically saying, like, he's kind of playing who he would have been if he hadn't kind of stepped away, you know, from Hollywood, you know.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it as him playing like maybe like an exaggerated version of himself, or like an amalgam of different like action stars like that, you know.
So essentially, that's who Danny Francesco is. He's an action star, does his own stunts, and makes apparently he's like one of the bigger stars in the world.
Right. Yeah. And they talk about how. To LPJ's opening, they talk about how Hugh Grant once offered him $10 million to jump out of a cake for his birthday, but he turned him down. So they go to get Danny Francesco, and they blackmail him into helping him because he's like having an affair with his sister-in-law, and they were able to find the evidence of it, like a video they were able to track down. So he agrees to help him get close to Hugh Grant. They go to a party that he's having on a big yacht. And Jason Statham is there posing as Josh Hartnett's manager, and Aubrey Plaza is his girlfriend.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Hugh Grant's character, he's obsessed with movie stars like that, but he's really obsessed with their girlfriends. He wants to have sex with like the girlfriends of famous people. And also, like, I feel like it should mention that, like, Hugh Grant, it's just kind of amazing how he's gone from like kind of like this like foppish leading man to this like awesome character actor. Yeah. Like, when you see him now, it's like, oh, man, this guy's awesome, you know?
I was thinking, like, he does a really good job in this movie, but that weird accent that he has, it's almost like he was playing, what's his name? That used to run Paramount Pictures.
The guy that produced, or was behind the Godfather or whatever. I can't think of what that guy's name is.
Oh, Robert Evans? Robert Evans looks like Robert Evans.
Yeah, it's almost like a...
Sound-
He's almost like a okay. British Robert Evans is essentially what he's playing him as.
I feel like I see a little bit of Michael Caine there. Like
maybe
really
a little Michael Caine too. It's like a weird amalgam of that, but it's very
He definitely looks like Robert Evans. Though.
Yes, but it's very exaggerated. It's pretty, it's pretty off the wall, but not in a bad way.
So basically they're at the party because they need to hack Hugh Grant's phone to find out who's buying the handle, right? So it's like a weird like charity auction for orphans of war where they're like selling like expensive jewelry and there's like a necklace. Oh, go ahead.
That's what Hugh Grant's kind of cover is a philanthropist who runs the orphans of war like foundation essentially.
Right. And Hugh Grant buys Josh Hartnett like a $1.5 million necklace. And that's when he introduces them to Trent and Arnold, who he just describes them as working in biotech. I laughed out loud at the joke where he's like, oh, let's go to the bar, get a drink. There's like a cocktail master there, and Aubrey Plaza's like, oh, that's what Josh Hartnett calls me, minus the tail.
He's like, I'll think I have to sit down.
It's pretty funny.
Look, I'm gonna say this now. Aubrey Plaza was my least favorite part of this movie.
Because she's just playing Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, and
you can tell that she was allowed to improvise a lot.
Right, and not in a fun way. Like, she was distracting. I was not a fan of Aubrey Plaza. Anyway, moving on.
So, of course, Mike's team is there on the boat. I like his whole interaction with that guy where he tries to give him, like, the watch just to be like, hey, just leave. I'll give him my watch. But then he wants, like, more money. So they have a pretty cool fight scene.
Yeah.
I can't remember what JJ says to him. It's like he's good with his hands or, like, better with his feet or something like that. But they have a pretty cool fight scene. So then Josh Hartnett is basically like saying that he's playing a role in a movie that's essentially like the same as like Hugh Grant. So Hugh Grant wants him to come to his like house to help research for the next role. Right. He also, as Dave pointed out, he hits on Aubrey Plaza because he's also kind of like a horny creep in this movie. So this is what I might need a little help. Because I got a little confused with some of the details. So it turns out the Ukrainians are the ones that stole the handle.
Well, not the Ukrainians specifically, the Ukrainian mafia.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. And they stole the handle, and they're the ones that are selling it for $10 million.
$10 billion with a B.
billion. So,
and can you do the little finger by your mouth, please, like Dr. Evil?
No. So Jason Statham breaks into the Ukrainian's villa to install like software on their computer so they can like track what's going on with them, right?
Yes.
And that's when he like pumps the gas in to knock everyone out in the villa. And that's where he sits down and watches like 2 minutes of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And they play Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head while he's like, he has to steal a bunch of stuff from the house, money and jewelry and stuff. And I would say like that robbery. I would say that this is a good use of the song, but not as good as the use in Spider-Man 2 when they play Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Anyone remember that? Anyone?
Yeah, no, we're good. We covered the episode.
Okay. So we didn't do Spider-Man 2.
We have another one?
No, we have not. I like that he goes to leave. She tells him to leave out the front door, and he leaves and like runs into the guards. And then like he's like, "Hey, you told me there are no guards." She said, "Like, yeah, out the front door. Most people don't put Olympic-sized swimming pools in the front yard." And Statham is kind of like, "All right." And then we do eventually see the fight scene like after the fact. And again, it's, I mean, anytime Jason Statham's beating people up, it's really cool, right? Like,
that's yes. One thing that I kind of noticed in this movie is, at no point was he ever in any danger.
I think that's the whole point of the character, is we have this unflappable, you know, like other people might be in danger, but this, because you know, I mean, I think I know it can sometimes not work in a movie, but I like, you know, going into a Jason Statham movie that he's not going to die, other than even in Crank 2 where he gets lit on fire.
No, here's what I would say is that I think that this whole movie is like, is it to a certain extent is like, it's like, okay, I'm Guy Ritchie, I'm going to make a James Bond movie. Because this is a James Bond movie. And James Bond is never really in any danger either in any of his movies.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But there is some drama. There is that's some tension to it. Like, you don't necessarily know that he's going to be fine. You know, yes, obviously he's going to be fine. He's James Bond. But
I think you're – I don't know if I could take you – this argument to me is a little flimsy because I feel like the same thing.
I'll put it to you this way. Goldfinger, for example. He's strapped to the table. The laser's there. Obviously, he's going to get out, but he's been put in that position to have right. some kind of peril happen to him. At no point was Jason Statham ever really in any kind of peril whatsoever.
Well, he's got a bunch of points where like those guys like have him kind of cornered, like, you know, they've got guns on him, and then
right. But you know, Bugsy Malone is right there with the gun.
Yeah, but you know that Bond's going to get out of it too.
I get
know?
It. Well, my point is, they at least try to make it seem like Bond is in trouble. This movie, they didn't even try. Like, at no point was, even up until the very end of this movie, when, spoiler alert, him and Mike is the worst bad guy I think I've ever seen in a film. He is so
ineffective. Mike does kind of suck.
Right. That's my point. My point is, I don't feel like he's ever in any real danger. There's no stakes to this movie. That's what irritated me with this part.
Okay, say it before you reviewed, LPJ. So they all go to Turkey. Aubrey Plaza and Josh Hartnett go to Hugh Grant's like giant mansion estate. And this is where I was a little confused, because Bugsy Malone and Jason Statham are following a lead from the computer about, and there's that guy, Kasim. Like, who's he? How is he involved? He's like,
he's just like another broker. Like, that, I think he's supposed to be one that's like a, like, you know, set up like another, like, you know, like, I think like a situation like a Hugh Grant type character wants deniability and layers of protection. So he's like setting up the meat, I believe.
Okay. Cause I know they said they Hugh Grant uses them to like grease the wheels a lot and like get stuff done. So,
yeah.
He does the legwork, essentially.
Yeah. So, at Hugh Grant's house, he has like this specific car from one of Josh Hartnett's movies that he made. It's the exact same car, and they take it for a drive. Yeah, it's a Mustang. They take it for a drive. JJ or Bugsy and Jason Statham, they follow Kasim, but Mike is there and like kidnaps him. Also, Aubrey Plaza breaks into Hugh Grant's computer. And find supposedly what like the file for like the handle is, but it seems like it's just a bunch of guns and stuff like that. So they don't, they're like, think the whole thing maybe is kind of bust because they're like, well, this is just guns. It's not anything important. Well, how could it be worth $10 billion? So at this point, Jason Statham follows Hugh Grant's lawyer, that Ben Harris. But then he recognizes Jason Statham as Josh Hartnett's manager who is introduced to him. I do like that little bit, though, when he's like following him and like Bugsy Malone is like blocking all his texts because everybody is like a computer expert in this, but he's blocking his texts and he's like, oh, I think Danny Francesco's manager is following me. And then Ben Harris, he steals a Vespa, which he really sucks at driving because he like immediately kind of crashes it. And then he kind of goes like, he takes an elevator up. I don't know, is it just like an observation deck or something? I was kind of confused as to what it was.
Yeah,
it was
like that.
It was like,
I think it's part of a building, but they have like an observation deck on it.
Yeah. And so like, there's a guy up there that Ben Harris sees, and Ben Harris basically like, you don't see it, but he throws this guy over because he wants Jason Statham to think that like he jumped off the balcony, and Bugsy Malone is down there and he's like, oh, this isn't Ben Harris. And then Ben Harris comes like running, trying to knock Jason Statham off the balcony. And Jason Statham just kind of like sidesteps him, and, like pushes him, and he falls off the balcony. And then Bugsy Malone is like, oh, here's Ben Harris. So then it turns out that the files about the guns were actually the key that they needed to unlock the drive from the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And that's when they find out that the handle is programmable AI, and it can control anything run by computers. Basically, if you've seen Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, it's what the what do they call it? The Entity. It's like the same thing as that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And I was... Which one came first? You know, it's like,
well, I would say
Carrie always in them.
I would say technically that this movie came out afterwards, but I think it was probably written before.
I would agree.
No, this movie came out before.
Yeah, this
they
movie
both came out in 2023. This came out in the winter, and Mission Impossible came out in the summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but either way, they were probably both filmed around the same time. I wonder if information was leaked one way or the other.
I don't know. But anyways, yeah. So
Cary Elwes again was in both of them. So he's like, hey guys, got this great idea for my other movie.
Yep.
Jason Statham poses as Ben Harris for the buy, for like the exchange, to give the money to get the handle. I have another note mentioning how horny Hugh Grant is in this movie. So horny. So the Ukrainians show up to the exchange with the handle, and like, he's posing as Ben Harris because they don't know what he looks like, but he has to call Hugh Grant to get like the passcode to exchange the money. So like Aubrey Plaza like uses a computer program to basically change Statham's voice into dead Ben Harris's voice.
And so he's got, one of the things I was kind of confused at was Hugh Grant has this very sophisticated security system in his house and cameras everywhere, but she only hacks the one camera, right? Whereas
that's the one they show. She might have done more than one, but okay.
No point do they ever figure out. I mean, they do at some point at the very, very end of kind of this whole scenario, but they never really figure out that she's the one hacking. They don't keep tabs on her. They don't have cameras viewing them at all.
Well, because she's kind of playing not a bimbo, but like, you know, just like a typical Hollywood starlet, except that she knows about art, apparently.
Yeah, but his
Hugh Grant is so horny for her, he doesn't
right,
care.
But his assistant was suspicious of her.
Yeah.
So you'd think you'd think the assistant would be keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, but he's like, shut up, assistant, I'm horny for this chick.
So the money transfer happens, but then there's a guard from the villa that recognizes Jason Statham. So like a big shootout breaks out and all goes to hell. A helicopter shows up and starts just mowing people down. And it turns out it's that freaking Mike Hook again. So Aubrey Plaza cancels the $10 billion transfer. But then like they get found out, as you were talking about. So her and Josh Hartnett escape from the house in the Mustang.
Yep.
But Mike Meanwhile, back at the exchange site, Mike takes the case with the handle from Jason Statham, and he like executes the Ukrainian. So they kind of figure out that something weird's going on, and they also at this point find out that like Mike wasn't contracted by any other part of the government. Like, so they don't know who he's working for. They get into one of the leftover helicopters and save Aubrey Plaza and Josh Hartnett. I liked it. Jason Statham thinks when he's trying to figure out how to fire the rockets, he's like, "Oh, R is for rocket," and like,
"Yeah, F is for forward," or something. Yeah, there.
And he hits the, and it's actually, and like, Bugsy Malone is like, "Oh, I think R is for reverse," because he fires a rocket backwards. That was pretty funny. Okay, so they end up, they go back because they took a bunch of stuff off Hugh Grant's computer, so they blackmail him into helping him figure out who the buyers are, right? Because they need to track down the handle. It turns out that Trent and Arnold, the biotech guys, are the buyers. They're going to use the handle to mess up the world's banking systems. And they've been heavily investing in gold because they want to make like gold to be the most valuable thing.
It's like reverse Goldfinger. it's literally the reverse Goldfinger plot. We're gonna, instead of irradiating the gold and making it worthless, we're going to eliminate everything else and make gold the only thing that's of value.
I mean, technically the reverse would be irradiate everything but gold.
Okay, yes, Dave. Technically you're right.
So and I couldn't figure out, so why, I know they need Hugh Grant to tell them who the buyers are, but why is Hugh Grant and Josh Hartnett there? Like, what is it?
Basically to sow discord, and to also, because they can basically get in and distract them while, you know, again, basically also scare the guys into, like, you know, basically scare them, you know, into giving, like, him his money, which is then go to the charity, you know, and, you know.
Well,
and to create that cool scene where he just like, hey, I'm gonna blow all this stuff up.
Hugh Grant's whole thing is he completed his job. He did deliver the way he said he was going to the buyers the way he said he was going to. Not quite exactly the way he said he was going to, but he did deliver. He did do his job. He still should get his commission. And so he goes there as a show of force to say, to make sure, you know, like other buyers don't screw him in the future. Basically, he has to put his foot down and say, you're going to pay me my commission. If you don't, I have these things at my disposal that can wipe out everything you have.
And I really like the scene with Hugh Grant, though, when he's like giving his whole speech about, and he like basically shows all the missiles he has and blows up all the stuff outside and like hands him the like going on a road trip with Tush, printed out directions that have the list of people's names and their houses.
And always count on your phone.
And how he's going to like kill him and stuff. So like, and like Trent and Arnold automatically want to pay him, but Mike doesn't want him to pay him. And that's when like they're too.
And that's the weird thing. I don't get why Mike doesn't want to pay them. Like there's no motivation for him to not pay them.
Yeah. It was
all that money is going to be useless anyway, because they're going to make it all useless. So they could pay him 10 times what he made. He doesn't have gold and they're going to make all the money useless anyway.
Yeah, it was kind of confusing as to, I didn't understand Mike's motivation.
He could buy gold really quick.
I didn't understand.
He has weapons, which are worth even more than gold.
Maybe Mike had that machine from Hudson Hawk that could turn stuff into gold.
He had the Da Vinci, whatever it is, machine. Yeah.
So while this is all going on, like, Bugsy Malone and Jason Statham are like taking out all of Mike's other men. but the discord is sowed between Mike and Trent and like their security, so they like basically take each other out and shoot each other, and they're all dead. And Statham gets up there and he recovers the handle, but then Mike's still there, and they have the most like anticlimactic fight between two people. He kind of punches Mike a few times and then hits him in the head with the case and kills him, maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
Mike was already very wounded.
Was it he got shot up in the shootout? Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
He was, he was a little shot up,
Okay. I didn't track that. Okay. So they get the case, Mike's dead, I think. And they go to Doha to meet up with Cary Elwes. And Cary Elwes is like, hey, great. But I got another job for you. And like, they're like, no, we're going on vacation. And he's like, all right, I'll give you like 36 hours. And they go back and forth. Dave really liked when he told him that he would, when he said, see you next Tuesday.
I did.
And then he's like, hey, we need all that money and jewelry you stole from the villa back. And he's like, oh, sorry, we used it for like a movie project. And then like during the credits, you see that Josh Hartnett is making a movie where he's playing Hugh Grant, and he's basically doing the whole scene that he did with Trent and Arnold and Mike. And I like the little bit where they like, you, it's like he's like yelling for the director and he's like, Guy. So it's always supposed to be like Guy Ritchie. Yeah. And that's the end.
That's it.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished, guys. We did it. Movie
indeed.
Over.
Operation Fortune accomplished.
Yep. I don't have.
Or was the ruse de guerre? Or we could talk about dick cakes more.
Well, I don't have any role reversals, so I don't have a lot left.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't read about any role reversals either.
I didn't see anything about a sequel. I didn't see anything about like spinoffs or maybe making like another. I don't know. I saw nothing else after this. There wasn't actually a whole lot on this movie that I could find.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't a lot of background stuff on it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, you want to just rate it?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. All right. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think all of your criticisms are fair.
I haven't made my criticisms yet. Get ready.
Yeah, everyone I've heard so far. It's fun. It is a little convoluted at points. You get a little, like, the fact that we've had to kind of like explain it, like, we think that's what happened, you know, like, we think this is that, you know, and like, the action is solid when it's there, and there's some good comedy and stuff like that. If you have Stars, I say certainly watch it. I wouldn't go out and buy it or pay for it, though. It's not Jason Statham's best. It's not Guy Ritchie's best. But it's still fun. I would give it 3 1/4 machine guns.
I'll go next because I can tell that LPJ has a big Sphinx energy in this episode.
Wow, that's kind of insulting, but okay.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything Tush said. Like, I definitely didn't watching it the first time and then watching it this time. I still enjoyed it, but I probably maybe not as much as the first time that I watched it. You know, like it didn't hold up as much, and I agree. Like, it's not. The plot's not great. It's kind of like it is basically a James Bond movie, but not a good James Bond movie, like a plot to a not as good James Bond movie. But I do like the performance of it. I like Hugh Grant in it. Yeah. I like Cary Elwes. Statham's just Statham. I like Bugsy Malone in it. I thought he was cool. I mean, I know he's kind of like the strong and silent type, but I kind of thought that. I like when they introduced him to wine, and he's like, oh, I don't drink wine. And then he drinks that really expensive. He's like, woo, or whatever he says. Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed him. And to your point, LBJ Aubrey Plaza is kind of distracting in this movie. But I don't know. I think I agree. Like, if you have Stars, I would check it out, watch it. But other than that, I wouldn't necessarily say you have to go out of your way. It's not like a key movie in the Guy Ritchie like pantheon. But I'll give it 2.5, right down the middle, 2.5 machine guns.
Okay. There are things that I like about this movie. I like...
It's finite runtime?
It's finite runtime.
They inspired you to research Grime.
I've used that line before. it's a good callback. I like Statham. He's always consistently Jason Statham in movies, and that's what I'm here for. I have no problem with that. I think Hugh Grant's really good in this. I think Josh Hartnett's actually really good in this too. I think he's kind of unsung in this movie. Cary Elwes is also solid, and Bugsy Malone is good in this too. I have no problem with Bugsy Malone. I have no problem with what he has to do. I wish there was more of him. You know, I think maybe, you know, he's just kind of the silent, dumb errand boy. Like,
he isn't dumb.
I get it. No, I get that. He's not. His character isn't supposed to be dumb, but they don't give him anything really meaty to do. Like, all the stuff that he goes to do, somebody else is doing it better than him, with the exception of, you know, sniping people. He's supposed to be the computer guy, but then Aubrey Plaza gets in and...
Well, I took it to him as, like Jason Statham was the main, like, operative, and Aubrey Plaza was the main, like, comms computer, and he was kind of... could do both, but he was kind of like the liaison. He could do everything. Jack
of all trades.
Yeah, he wasn't really a specialist.
I get it, but I wish he was a specialist. I wish he had something more profound to do. I thought it would have been a better use of his character, because I do like his character. I think he was good in this. And yeah, and Aubrey Plaza's the worst. I did not like her in this. I'm not a big Aubrey Plaza fan to begin with, and I don't like her Aubrey Plaza-ness that she brings to this movie, because she has a certain, you know, she just has a certain way she goes about things in everything that she does, and I don't think it was appropriate for this movie. I think she was horribly miscast in this. The plot doesn't make any sense, or at least the plot makes sense, but there's too many plot holes for it to be cohesive. Mike's a terrible villain. He's no challenge whatsoever to Jason Statham. So it's not even there's no peril in this. There's no stakes to it. It's all, you know, there's no drama to this comedy, this action comedy. Not that there should be a lot of drama, but there should be something to, I don't know. There's a lot of things missing from this movie. I'm still going to go 2.5 machine guns, but only because it's not unwatchable. The stuff that's in it is good enough to make it enjoyable in parts, but it's not a rewatch. Don't, you know, watch this once for free. Don't go see it again. Don't pay money for it. If this is the Guy Ritchie movie you pick to watch, make it be like the sixth or seventh Guy Ritchie movie that you pick. It's 2.5 machine guns. It's not great, not terrible.
I would still, I still contest your thesis that James Bond is often in peril in James Bond movies, because I just don't buy that.
Just for that terrible last one.
I would say maybe, except for that time when he gets his nuts hit with that rope.
Yeah, but they try. They at least have plausible villains. Whether they're effective or not is another thing.
Daniel Craig Bond is kind of a bitch compared to the others. So.
What's that?
The Daniel Craig Bond's kind of a bitch compared to the others, so... He's in peril a little bit more, I'd say.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, that's fair. I mean, I think everyone is fair with their ratings, so yeah.
Well, I agree with you, so I would say yes, it's fair. You and I have the same rating. I think your 2.5 2.5 machine gun rating the same as mine is fair.
I thought Dave's was a little high, but you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
You are so assy this episode.
That review was almost as long as your dick cake description.
Almost as
long.
The
only time I've ever tried to do a wrap it up symbol.
But you know what though?
What?
My review didn't curve up.
I'm a little worried. We still have another episode to record tonight. Ooh. I hope your assiness alleviates.
It'll have to. All right, I got nothing. What do you got? Your book's out.
Yeah, my book is out. Overtime: Adventure in a Lesser Hell. I guess we're doing plugs. Plugs.
Yeah, plug away.
You want it's my real name is David Cytaki. So for looking up purposes, CYTACKI. Right now it's just available in the US, but for your UK and Ireland listeners, I'm gonna try to see about getting it available at least on Kindle over there. So give it a try, people. It's my first effort. I hope you enjoy it. I've gotten some good reviews so far, so. Maybe I even get LPJ and Hovercraft Joe to read it. But
look at that.
I would just like to state for the record is that, like, I'm not against reading your book. I just don't read many books.
That's fair. That's where I'm at, too. Look, I got no problem reading your book. I got a problem reading books.
Yeah, like, let me know when the
short story collection which Hovercraft Joe said he might find a little bit more palatable. He's like, sure. Especially if I include pictures. And the pictures have boobies in them. He's like, well, then I can maybe get on board.
Let me know when there's an audio book version of it.
I'll read your book if I can do the audio version for you.
Ooh, I like it.
I would like to plug Tubi. This movie is not on Tubi. I had to sign up for a Starz membership to watch this movie, but I'm getting 3 months of Starz for $1.99 for the first 3 months. So I just got to remember to cancel that before it's up. But you know what? It was worth it because Starz has Mallrats, and I watched Mallrats and realized that I still have that entire movie memorized.
You remember the first time we watched Mallrats?
Yeah, this is turning into a plug for Mallrats. We watched Mallrats in LPJ's basement. We rented it, watched it, rewound it, and watched the entire movie again.
Back to back.
That's how I watched it, other than in LPJ's basement.
That's a movie that I told Tushis a lot that, like, the commentary for that, I've watched that movie so many times, the commentary, it's so funny. I was just talking to Tush about it at work the other day with Ben Affleck is so great in that commentary. And he's like, hey, we've made comic book covers of everyone. You're Buttman. Thanks, guys. And then I wanted to plug, I've been talking about my rewatch of the X-Men the Animated Series. I will say this, I fell short, I fell off the pace, and I didn't get everything watched. I get pretty far into it, but I have watched the first two episodes of X-Men 97, and it was really, 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 really good.
I agree.
So if you're into the X-Men, if you're into the Animated Series or whatever, I would check it out because it was a solid effort. So yeah, that's what I got.
Sweet. Yeah, I agree with the X-Men 97 thing. I actually just finished the second episode earlier today, and I like where they're going with it. I like that it's going to be 10 episode seasons because I feel like they'll trim the fat a little bit.
The only thing my only knock on it is that some of, like, they brought back a lot of the original voice cast, and some of them, like, you're maybe a little too old to it. Like, Rogue sounds like she's like 60 years old in it now. Yeah. But
me there, darling.
Basically, yeah. It's like you could tell she's too old to be being Rogue. Right. But yeah. There's a
who's it's a new voice for Cyclops. Wolverine, right?
No, I think it's the same Wolverine voice.
Oh, then it's a different. It sounds different.
Yeah. Well, anyways, go into your plugs, anyway, LPJ.
Go to the Discord. Tell us about your favorite Guy Ritchie movie. You know, it's probably not going to be this one, but, you know, we'll chat about it. It'll be great.
And I would just like to say, we know there's better Guy Ritchie movies. We were trying to get one that was more action oriented for the podcast. And that's why we were going to do Wrath of Man until it was shockingly unavailable, unless we all wanted to buy it, which we didn't.
Right. Which is a shame because I've seen that and it's good. I enjoy
it. Yeah. And we still might do it if at some point it comes back on a streaming service that we have.
Yeah.
It was the first new movie that I saw after the pandemic.
Yep. Like, I'm okay,
Guy Ritchie. So Stallone or Statham movie. I almost said Stallone, but anyway.
Yeah. So join us on the Discord and you can chat with us about your favorite Guy Ritchie movies. Hit us up on Instagram. Every once in a while, I'll pop on Facebook and see comments and respond to them. If I remember to, I'm not on Facebook too much anymore. Hop on Instagram or Discord. And this is, we should say, this is the 269th episode.
Haha, 69.
Which, you know, we're one episode away from toppling the Legend of Retro, which was kind of our goal.
I would say it's your goal, but I'm along for the ride for sure.
Listen, well, I feel as though you're just as excited about it as I am.
I mean, I'm excited.
I would say that I'm excited that we're at 270 episodes. I would say you're excited about toppling Legend of Retro.
I'm very excited for you guys because my understanding from what all you said, those Legend of Retro guys are a bunch of mark-ass busters.
They are. They're scrubs, and we don't want no scrubs.
Scrubs is a guy who can get no love from me.
Right. And I'm excited for what we have planned for episode 270.
Mm-hmm.
And I very excited for it. That's all I'm going to say. Very excited for it.
And I'm excited that we're at episode 270, but also kind of dreading the fact that we still have at least 30 more to do.
That's okay. You know what? Wrath of Man's going to be one of them.
That's true. Wrath of Man will be one of them. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So, yeah, get ready next week for 270. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Great. Tush, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Sweet. Anything else? No. All right. Well, in that case, this episode of the Last Action Podcast has been terminated.
But we'll be back.